And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back together here. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. What's going on? How you doing?
The frenzy, man. We've got free agency frenzy. So I laugh because we kind of put together a rundown for what we wanted to do on the show today. And then as we start, it's just click refresh, refresh, refresh. And we see all these new moves that are taking place. Like literally from when I just started this to 5 seconds ago on Twitter, Rappaport just tweeted out the Bears are expected to sign Bengals DT Larry Ogunjobi, who's a really, really good player. Just one of numerous moves that we're going to get into here today. We're also, speaking of defensive tackles, we're going to have one of the best in the business here. Cam Hayward from the Pittsburgh Steelers is going to join us. Looking forward to chatting with him. And we can always ask him about his new quarterback, Buck, because that news just came down that Mitchell Trubisky, your Tar Heel, is headed to Pittsburgh.
Wow, that's a very interesting move. Gosh, so now they have three guys in the room.
Well, like, I mean, he's going to be the starter. I mean, he's coming. Yeah. He's going there to start. He's going to be.
I mean, I would think he's there. That may leave some hurt feelings. Mason Rudolph in that crew.
Dwayne Haskins, yeah.
But no, I think it's a good move. So here's why it's a good move. I've felt like this is, and we've talked about it, this being the ultimate reset for the Steelers. Yeah. I think the Steelers are going back to the original identity. Sometimes when you have a franchise quarterback for so long, the team morphs away from what the identity of the team is and more into the identity of the quarterback. And what we saw, particularly the last decade with the Steelers under Ben Roethlisberger, it was more of an offensive-centric type deal with the passing game and those things. I think this is a chance for Mike Tomlin to go back and kind of reestablish how the Steelers are going to go for the next 5 or so years. So defense being strong with new ideas from Terrell Austin and Brian Flores, offense maybe getting back to the ground attack and maybe some creative run game with, like Najee Harris and Mitchell Trubisky being able to do it. And then Matt Canada being able to kind of put his own identity on this offense. I think it's a new era for Pittsburgh football.
So I think this is kind of an underrated point, and you just brought it up. I want to get to that because you talked about some creativity with the run game. And Trubisky, you know, for whatever you think of him as a passer, first of all, if you go back to that 2018 season, his second year in the league, he goes 11-3 as a starter. He has 24 touchdowns, 12 picks, but also ran the ball pretty well. So this is somebody that's very athletic. They talked about wanting to get more athletic. I kind of advocated at the time that they should have used him more in the run game in Chicago because mm-hmm. he can really run. And I think now if the Steelers wanted to get more athletic, I think Trubisky gives them that. And I think it's not just his ability to extend and create. I think you can mix in some design quarterback run game there with Najee.
Yeah, no, I think some of it had to do with Mitchell Trubisky. Maybe sometimes we can get our own head in how we think the quarterback position should be played. I think the year in Buffalo allowed him to see that the quarterback can be a few different things. He doesn't have to just be this pocket passer that everyone talks about. He sat and watched Josh Allen utilize his legs. Josh Allen was basically their lead runner. And so maybe he steps into that and becomes more of an instinctive player who takes advantage of his legs and his athleticism and mobility to add a dimension to the running game, to do some of the zone read and quarterback design runs to make the game easy for himself. Because we can talk about him. I think now there's a greater appreciation for Mitchell Trubisky after seeing what the Bears offense looked like without him. I think there's certainly some things that the Steelers can do to enhance his skill set and allow him to play winning football without having to be drastically different than the way that he was when he entered the league.
Yeah, it's going to be, a much different look to that offense, just completely different. Uh-huh. I'm curious to see how much they're going to put him under center. Versus, Ben was so comfortable just sitting back up there in the shotgun and sitting in his rocking chair and throwing the ball. I think not only is we talked about the design quarterback run game, it is going to help out an offensive line that played a lot of young guys that were very uneven, a little up and down. But man, it's a lot easier now when you know that quarterback's not going to be in the exact same location on every single snap. It makes your pass rush playing a little more difficult from that standpoint, Buck.
Yeah, it does. And I think people have to understand Matt Canada spent time. He was the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin under Brent Bielema years ago, I was at the Big Ten Championship game when Melvin Gordon ran for a million yards running jet sweeps and those things. And so he has the under center game in his bag. He also has it with the creativity that we've seen from the Rams and those things with the fly sweep motion and jet sweep motion and that stuff. So it is about finding a way to make the game really easy for the quarterback. And the one way that you can do it is by putting them on the move, bootlegs from under center, design quarterback run, RPO type stuff in the shotgun, utilizing all that stuff to really make sure that the quarterback is playing the game in a fashion that's really easy for him to flourish and thrive.
Yeah, I want to get to the theme we've got here, by the way. Quandre Diggs just re-signed with Seattle. The safety, 3 years, $40 million. You have the Dolphins, who have re-signed one of their own in Emmanuel Agba. The Bears, you know, we mentioned Larry Okunjobi. You know what those teams have in common? Now that Seattle has moved on from Russell Wilson, as they don't have expensive quarterbacks. So you're seeing these teams with some space and some room be very aggressive. So I'm curious to see how this all fits together, because we just had Matthew Stafford, making a good chunk of money. He's going to make a lot more money with his new deal that's going to come down pretty soon. But you still see, and that kind of changed the narrative. Well, you don't have to have a rookie deal in order to go win a Super Bowl. You can do it with a high paid veteran. But this is a great example today. Man, when you do have that quarterback who's not eating up any space, you got a lot of space to operate, man.
You build up the team. Build up the team. Like, it should be a gradual transition, right? So, DJ, we talked about it. And that's one of the reasons why I have advocated for, hey, man, play the young guy early so you get all 4 or 5 years to do it. Because ultimately what you want to do is you want to go 5 years under the rookie deal where we got the all-star team. And then if we have the right quarterback, the shift happens where he begins to take more ownership of the team in terms of playing style. And then we auction off some of those other parts because we know we have to pay him a ton of money.
Yeah.
And when we pay him a ton of money, the dynamics of the team changes. This is what teams are doing. So that's why you want to have the rookie quarterback. And you want to have the rookie quarterback on the field so we can figure out if he's good enough to do it. Because ultimately, we got to hand the baton to him and see if he can carry us over the threshold while we have all these other pieces.
All right, I want to get to another thought on that, because you're talking about, you know, these young players and being able to surround the young rookie quarterbacks. Who was I just looking at now? There's so much stuff happening so fast here, Buck. It's just going and going and going. As I sit down here and look at it, I totally lost it. I'll get back to it. I'll figure out where I was going on that. We just had Alex Kappa, by the way, signed 4 years, yeah, $40 million with the Bengals. So we knew they were going to aggressively address the offensive line. The first step in that process has been done there. So I'll eventually, that point will come back to me, Buck, as my brain resettles. But what do you think about the Kappa move?
I think Kappa move is what we talked about. We knew that the Bengals were not going to run it back as is, as presently constructed. They were not going to do that. And so we talked about, this is an area of the team where you have to address it in free agency, and then you come back and readdress it again in the draft. And so Kappa gives them a guard, which they needed. And we saw in big moments, their guards had a tough time being firm and they gave up sacks. And so now the Bengals are able to get a veteran. They'll probably try and come back and get another one, maybe a center. And then they'll probably devote a couple of draft resources to fortifying that offensive line. But they're not going to go back and let the offensive line continue to be an issue. So that's what I think. I think what's also interesting, DJ, what we're seeing is quick re-signing of some of these guys on big deals. The Emmanuel Agba thing to me is really interesting because of how much money they're paying him. $65 million on a $4 million note is tremendous. We'll wait and see what Ojinobi gets. Because that's a big one. He has 7.5 sacks.
He's a good player. He's one of the premier interior guys. I was told, by the way, that I think it's DJ Jones from the Niners is going to get paid well. So again, this is kind of fun. We're just literally updating this as we go along, and it's just fun to follow. I remembered my point, by the way. It came back to me after I got sidetracked by some of this breaking news with the signings. Okay, so most quarterbacks, man, go get as many talented people as you can. Help me out. Support me. Maybe save one, because remember this whole storyline about Kyler Murray? And Kyler Murray wanting to get a deal done. and the Arizona Cardinals saying, we're going to be patient on this. You know, maybe this is something that takes place later in the summer. You know, maybe this kind of, you know, gets into training camp, or maybe they want to push it out even a full year. The reason why I think that there was a push to get that done, Buck, is because now, look, they just paid James Conner a bunch of money. They just paid Zach Ertz a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised they do one or two more other things. Then guess what? You go to Kyler Murray and say, man, we're trying to help you out, man. We're trying to get all these players for you. But side note, we don't have the money to pay you right now. We got to kick that can down the road a little bit. And then we'll see how much hardball he wants to play and if he wants to exercise some leverage. I don't know that he has any. You can use baseball if you want. But I think that this is – can you kind of see it? Are you kind of following this thing down that path?
Hey, it's not.
We're trying to help you. This is not how much we believe in you. It's not you, it's me.
I just need a little time to kind of figure out what's going on and this and that. Yeah, they're trying to kick the can down the street because, look, man, it was the weirdest set of events and incidents that we saw. Like Kyler Murray, like he scrubbed his Instagram account. Then his agent comes out and talks about like trying to hold him hostage in terms of the deal, all caps with the letter and those things. And so now what you have, oh, by the way, Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury get extensions. So now they're firmly entrenched. So now everyone's
they're
like,
not going anywhere.
Hold on. Let's wait a minute for a minute. Let's see what this looks like. And so, yeah, I think it kind of flips it back and they will maybe play a little hardball with Kyler Murray and they'll see. Okay, if you say you don't want to sign this and you're, you know, so frustrated with all the stuff that's going on, we'll keep building up the team. And then just kind of see what it looks like.
I want to go back real quick and let me just look up this contract terms here. So with Trubisky, circling back real quick, we'll see. It looks like it's a 2-year deal. We don't have the money yet, right? But I think the assumption is this takes them out of the quarterback in the draft, right? Even though we had heard them connected to Malik Willis.
Yep.
So if you believe everything kind of works in circles and comes back around, once upon a time, the Chicago Bears in the offseason and free agency signed Mike Glennon to a 3-year, $45 million contract. The Bears are out of the quarterback market until they weren't, until Mike Glennon showed up at the draft party for the Bears. And he had to usher him out because they just took Mitch Trubisky. Yeah. So Trubisky gets a 2-year commitment. I'm just saying, like, I hope for his sake that they cleared the runway for him and he goes off and has a great time and plays well for the Steelers. But I would not rule out drafting a quarterback. And it would be, man, you talk about ironic. Everything would be coming full circle in Trubisky's career.
Because it could be a blinking light, right there, particularly the Malik Willis thing. I'm gonna say this, DJ. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Like I thought the quarterback, the combine worked out well.
Yeah.
But I tell you, all of the quarterback activity from the Monday at the return, maybe my feeling and optimism about the class was not met by executives because there's been a ton of activity where people are really shoring up that position. That I don't know. We always talk about the quarterbacks getting the bump in the draft. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen this year. I don't know if because we always talk about like it moves up. It seems like people are just really settling in and then maybe they'll let the just draft board fall to them as it breaks. But it definitely doesn't have the same field as
they took. Games. At least you took the urgency away from them, right? You don't want to be in a position where you're like, man, we only like one of these quarterbacks and I don't want to go into the draft pinning all my hopes that guy's going to get there when I pick. So you don't have – now you got a guy, you got a veteran, you can play there. But maybe if it's your one guy that falls there, maybe that doesn't preclude you from doing that. But I do think it does tell you, for the most part, these teams aren't in love with this quarterback class at all. Larry Ogunjobi, by the way, 3 years, $40.5 million. So that's a good number for him.
And if you can get after pass, you can get paid.
That
1 year gamble that he bet on himself with the Bengals paid off handsomely. Good gracious.
Yeah. Yeah, good for him. All right, we are going to visit here with Cam Hayward. On the other side of that interview, we will update anything that happened in terms of the signings while we're recording this. We'll hit on the Tom Brady situation coming back to the Bucs. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with one of the best defensive linemen in the entire league and chat and visit with Cam Hayward of the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, Buck, excited to have Cam with us right now. Cam, first of all, man, thank you for taking some time for us. I know this is a crazy day in the league. I'm just curious, like what as a player, and you're looking at your team and you're looking at your position, I would imagine you're curious kind of what everybody's getting around the league. What's a day like this like for you?
Man, I don't want to look at what people are getting. I'm looking at what my team is getting and if they can add to our team and help enhance what we already have. You know, it's crazy. You know, every time you look down your phone, something's changing. And I want to be present in this, but there are probably some big things probably about that.
You know, so Cam, you mentioned looking at what is going on and what people are getting and those things. To me, it seems like there's been an explosion in the amount of money that people are paying the guys up front on the defensive side of the ball, defensive tackles, edge rushers. Why do you think we're seeing more teams commit more money to those positions? Why is it so important to have a solid front line?
Well, I think, first of all, you're paying your quarterback so much money, right? You got to be able to stop them. And the best way to stop them is either a corner who can, you know, defend every wide receiver or defensive lineman or outside linebacker that is kicking butt up front.
Yeah, when you speak of the quarterback position, one of the big news stories that just came down at literally a few minutes before you popped on is that the Pittsburgh Steelers, your team, has a new quarterback. Mitchell Trubisky signed, spent some time there with the Buffalo Bills after his career got going with the Chicago Bears. I'd love to get just your immediate thoughts about somebody new joining the quarterback room here in Trubisky.
You know, excited. You know, I don't know what this all entails, but, you know, we're going to have a healthy competition at the quarterback position. You know, you had a guy like Dwayne Haskins who, you know, paid his dues last year. Mason's been in waiting, got to play one game as well. But then you bring another guy in the mix that has had a winning record at, you know, Chicago Bears and then had a year in Buffalo where he didn't play much. But all three guys are capable of winning, and they've won games in the NFL. So we're going to have ourselves a really good competition going forward, and we'll see who comes out to be the best.
You know, you guys are having a ton of change. And on the defense side of the ball, you have a new defense coordinator who has been there, Terrell Austin. And then you have Brian Flores, who comes over as a senior defensive assistant. Do you expect there to be major changes to what you guys have traditionally been? Or do you think those guys will bring new ideas and add to what the foundation has been established?
Well, I think the foundation stays the same. We have a lot of returning players. And I don't think you want to mess that up too much because there has been success there. But, you know, having a guy like TA and a guy like Flo, both of them bring different ideas, whether it's back end or front end. They both have experience at being defensive coordinators and have a lot of success. So I think it just only enhances what we have. I know they're very excited to get to work. Keith Butler has been awesome for us over the years and the different blitzes he's created. But it doesn't hurt to have a fresh face in there. And now we got two of them. TA's been around, but you know, now he's driving the ship.
I'm curious about, you know, what you think it means to be a Steeler, because when I was working with Baltimore, we had guys that we always kind of thought were Raven type players. And then there wasn't much difference between what we valued and what Pittsburgh valued. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been such a great rivalry over the years. But you know, when you look at guys that have come in there and have been that have fit culturally into what you guys do, like, how would you describe that? What is kind of that ideal Pittsburgh Steeler?
You know, I think it's more substance over just look. You know, you can make a case that their social media has taken over every locker room, but production has become the big thing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They look for complete players. They look for character players. But I think the big thing that stands out is there's a grit and a toughness that goes along with every position. And I feel like, for the most part, the Pittsburgh Steelers have been a part of that. You know, whether it's Ben Roethlisberger breaking his nose and continuing to keep playing, or, you know, Ike Taylor being, you know, not a great catcher, but a great tackler and being able to stop the run. You know, having a guy like Casey Hampton who's able to take on 2 to 3 blocks and is able to, you know, not only have a big, not a big stat line, but, you know, able to affect the game and make sure those two A gaps are shored up. There's all these different things that are intangible, like that you can't really just measure by just looking at a combine or just stats out there.
It's funny because now I wonder, when you talk about like the toughness of the Steelers, Cam, if I come to your team, can that be taught? Can I be taught how to be tough like a Steeler, or do I kind of have to have some of that already in me?
I know some of it's already in them, but it can be taught or we can break you into it. So I think that's one thing we really do strive to do. We will make you fit the mold. There have been some guys over the years that have done things differently, and especially on the defensive side, where I've tried to make sure there's Pittsburgh Steelers by the end of the season. I'll say that.
I absolutely love that, man. Hey, your brother, got a chance to see your brother at the combine. And he's one of the more, he really is a unique player because of all the different uses that they showed with him in college. And you see him in the backfield, you see him as a wing, you see him in line, does all these different things. But I want to get to your thoughts on some of these other defensive players in the draft. But first of all, I need your scouting report on your brother.
Man, you're going to turn me into a car salesman right now.
I love it. I want your sales pitch, man. I love him. And by the way, Mel Tucker is a good friend of both Bucky and ours. So, and you can't get a higher recommendation than what he gave us.
Well, you know, Mel has been awesome for my brother. I think he helped transform Connor into a more complete player. You know, over his 4 years, or I should say 5 years now, but he's played so many different positions that he never saw it as an added plus. Mm-hmm. And now looking at it now, it was the best thing for him. From being able to play running back and play running back well, to fullback, to tight end, to slot, that is a mixture that doesn't come around often. You know, in high school, Connor was a quarterback as well. So, you know, it just shows you he's been prepared for everything. But I think the thing I loved about Connor, you know, he can catch, he's got the best hands, I think. But the thing about Connor that really stands out, it's how fluid he is at his position. I didn't realize it until I got to see it up close. I was on the sideline during the combine, and I saw him for a second, and he was like, man, I had a bad 40 time, which was a 4.7. I didn't think that was bad at all.
Yeah.
But he came up to me, and I was like, just fall out in the position drills.
Yeah.
And then I watch him through the position drills, and I get to see how fluid and how he's able to catch over the top of his head. And, you know, it just looks so natural for him. And being able to put him as a football player on that field, I don't think there's going to be many that are like him that's going to be able to, you can essentially hide him in different positions.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's always looking for that third tight end, that fullback.
It saves you a roster spot, man.
It does. And that plays a big spot in the NFL.
Yep.
Nobody really talks about that. But to be able to have a guy who plays multiple positions goes a long way. And I think Connor's going to really exceed or excel at that level where he's able to just play so many different positions. It's really going to help a team that wants to go from, you know, 12 personnel to 21 or, you know, five wide receivers and then slide him into a running back position. You know, you can't do that with a lot of guys. And until you next see him at the next level.
You're not going to want to hear it, but I said it on the air when he was working out. I said, just mark it down. He'll be a Patriot. Because the Patriots will use, they'll exactly like you said, they'll look at that as such an advantage. And as a team that morphs more than anybody from 1 week to the next, he gives you that flexibility to do all that stuff. Like they're going to appreciate that more than most teams, which is going to piss you off because he's going to be a Patriot, man.
Well, that's going to piss me off. But, like, for me as a player, I always look at tendencies and I always look at personnel. And when you're able to stash guys in different positions, that is the most annoying thing as a guy who knows what he's doing. You know, because you can't just play, you know, the favorite plays. They're able to do so much. It really makes you ambidextrous.
You know, Cam, it's funny because you had an opportunity to watch all these guys work out at the combine. And so I'm gonna be honest with you. It seems like there's been an evolution at the defensive line positions because these guys are like the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. You just don't see guys move around like that. So when you look at the next generation of guys that are about to come through the draft, what are your initial thoughts when you saw them work out up in Indianapolis?
Well, when I saw them run, I was like, I need to get that whatever that turf is and bring it back to Pittsburgh. Because everybody's moving way too fast. You know, when you had Jordan Davis running the 4.7, I was like, man, now you're just making me slow, old. I didn't know what to think. But, you know, these guys have just evolved so much from when I played. And or I think I would like say when I played, but it's just it's cool to see you know the difference in you know and the real cool thing I would say is you know NFL is very cyclical in what we go through, and you get to see guys evolve, and then you get to see trends start to come back in. I know everybody's going to the smaller linebackers or the smaller offensive linemen. And then you get these big tree trunks that really stick out. And so when Jordan Davis is lined up against, you know, 290 pounds, that's not going to be fair at the next level. But that's the trend we're going through.
No, it's so true. I want to ask you about some of these other Georgia guys because it was one of the best groups from one school that I've seen that I can remember coming through. And gosh, you had dudes on your team coming out as well. But when you look at somebody like Walker, right? To me, he can do so many different things. They play him on the edge. They kick him inside and let him rush. He's got 35-inch arms. I don't know if you saw the field workout, but he's so fluid and so smooth. But what kind of, again, I guess it kind of goes back to this theme of being able to be multiple and versatile, but having somebody at 280 pounds with that type of versatility, what can that do for your defense?
You know, I think it's interesting. I've seen people say he could play end in a 3-4, and I'm like, the weight kind of scares me. I know he's got all the measurables of, you know, the 35-inch arms, but, you know, to do that for 17 weeks is tough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a 4-3 scheme, he can play all the way down the line.
Yeah.
He's that versatile. And, you know, you look at that Clemson game, I thought he was the best player out there. You know, he was mm-hmm. record shot that game.
Yeah. One of the other things I want to ask you about, too, is, you know, the talk with Jordan Davis, going back to him real quick, keep mm-hmm. the Georgia thing going.
Yeah.
He came off the field on third downs. And my answer to that was, well, when you have Wyatt Davis, who is the only other defensive lineman who tested better than he did at the combine, shows you what a freak he is. And then they've got a kid in Jalen Carter who's not eligible for the draft, who's better than all these dudes. He's a top five pick next year.
Yeah, the scouts have already been telling me that's the one.
Oh, he's the dude. He is the dude.
Yeah.
But my question then is, have you seen this in your experience? Just because somebody might not be asked to do something doesn't mean they can't do something.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the conundrum. You know, what have you done in college versus what you're going to do in the pros? I think with him, you know, I think it was like 30-40% he played.
Yeah.
But can he play the tilt? You know, can he play the two-eye shade? If he can do that, he can be a three-down player. You know, I think he might not be the starter in some packages, but he can provide a big, big enhancement to any team. I look at a guy like a team like Buffalo, who, you know, struggled in the run to an extent, but you bring that guy in, there's no way that New England's running that ball like they did in that game where it was a snowball of all games.
So, Kim, so I need to lean on your experience just to help me when I'm evaluating guys. So when you're evaluating defensive linemen, what are two or three things that you're looking for in that evaluation? Like, what are the traits that we should be looking at when we're trying to determine the good ones and the great ones? We're trying to separate those guys at the top.
Well, I think the first thing for me is the short shuttle. It's a hidden thing, but if you can really see if someone can move laterally and you can see how well they track well, and then being able to flip their hips. Along with that, broad jump is huge because I want to see you explode out of your hips. If you just sit back too much, you really don't get to see, you know, that explosion out, and you'll get to see a guy really, you know, set the line of scrimmage. And that's what you're looking for at the defensive line. And then the last thing for me is always position drills. And I want to see what you did in college. You know, those two things, position drills and what you did in college, go hand in hand. You can be a workout warrior. You can literally look like a Greek god. But if you don't, you know, dominate and make sure your presence is known as a defensive lineman, I can't ride with you. You know, you see some of these guys, and I love it because a guy like Jordan Davis might not have all the stats, but you knew he was dominating games every single time he was on the field. And when you can get that type of compliment, you know you're ready for the next level.
I want to ask you about somebody we were just talking about at the top of the show who just got a good chunk of money, and that's Larry Ogunjobi, who you know, when I've watched him, they played, I do the Charger games. They played them this year. So getting ready for that game. And I don't think he really gets a whole lot of love or a whole lot of attention, mm-hmm. but what's your take on him as a player?
You know, I think he got hurt this past year with Cincinnati at the end, but I thought he was more one of the more consistent guys. Even when he was with Cleveland, I thought he was, you know, I wouldn't say Batman or Robin with Miles Garrett, but, you know, they were like the super friends. They worked together, and they were very, you know, they complemented each other very well. And, you know, he's got good hands, good extension. Is able to be not only a player in the run game, but he can affect the quarterback as well.
I want to ask you about another guy here because I'm, you know, you guys see so much crossover tape. I'm curious, by the way, first of all, do you when you guys vote for Pro Bowl stuff, how seriously do you guys take that? And how much do you guys really watch? I know in crossover tape, you're going to see guys, but how much do you really pay attention, you know, either in season or out of season to what's going on around the league, your position?
I have to watch everybody's tape. You know, for me, I like to not only emulate what they're doing, but see how I can apply it towards the O-line. And, you know, voting on Pro Bowl is weird. You want to be recognized.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, some guys don't play for so long that they're trying not to get hurt, so it kind of messes up the game. Yeah. There's a lot of that where it's like, you know, this player A hasn't played since December. Now let's throw him out there in February.
Yeah.
And then he's got a contract to worry about. So it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
But I will say there was a guy that on the O-line who was talking a little bit of junk to some of our outside linebackers and DNs. He had a long day that day. That was the worst time to pick a battle. And, you know, it did not go in his favor of the day.
Oh, well, let me ask you that real quick then. So, in your opinion, I'd be curious, your career, maybe currently or maybe all time, who's the best offensive lineman that you went up against, that you go up against?
I would say the best offensive lineman is probably Marshall Yonder.
Yeah,
You know, he was just solid in every position. You know, never got out of character, never overextended himself as an O-lineman, which is huge. If you get overextend yourself at all, you're done. You know, very even keel. I think they asked him to play, you know, guard to center to tackle. To have that type of flexibility as a player is pretty uncommon. And I just thought he had a mean streak when, you know, they wanted to run the ball. They were running behind him.
Yeah, I remember I was in Baltimore when we drafted him, and it was a situation where we had already taken, I believe we had taken Ben Grubbs in the first round. Mm-hmm. And it was like, man, do we double down on interior line? I'm like, oh, this guy's so good. Like, I can't believe he's still here. So we took him. But there was a play in college, Cam, against their rival at Iowa State. You can find it on YouTube if you haven't seen it already. But it's like a reverse and a peel back. It's one of the best kill shots that you'll ever see. But, like, he was a killer on the field, man.
Yeah, and then now you look at him now, he is, like, 230 pounds. I'm like,
yeah.
Man, this guy was kicking a whole lot of tail. And now people are just seeing the afterthought of what he is. And it's like, man, you guys don't even know. He's a monster.
So I got to ask you this before we let you go. All the quarterback movement and all the quarterbacks we now are seeing in the AFC, from Josh Allen to then in the West, like in your division, you talk about Joe Burrow, you have Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield. We have all the guys in the West and Herbert, Mahomes, and those things.
Yeah.
When you're thinking about what the Steelers have to do to get through it, how challenging is it to deal with so many different A-level quarterbacks in the conference?
I don't look at it as I look at it as a challenge, and I get excited for that challenge. But it's no burden. I think when you have a strong defense, you're able to overcome some of that. Towards then we struggled a little bit in stopping the run, but you know, you as a defender, you have to look to relish those moments. Having Mika and TJ, and then hopefully get some guys back off their injury. I think that only prepares us for the gauntlet we got to run. And I'm not just talking about the AFC North. You know, the AFC is full of really good quarterbacks. But if you want to get to the top, you're going to have to go through them.
All right, dude, you've been awesome. It's been fun to kind of go on this little journey with you. Last question from me, because I won't go back to your college stuff, Ohio State. Did you watch the Rose Bowl this year? And have you ever seen anything like Smith and Jigba, what he did in that game?
Yeah, I think our Rose Bowl ended up 26-17.
Yeah.
But theirs was just like, you know, the first half, I don't even think I watched. I think I was seeing the new Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
And so I got out of the theater and I saw the score and I'm like, what is going on? How are we giving up this many points?
Yeah.
You know, the defense at Ohio State, we take that very personally when we're giving up points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first half, they, you know, I always think back to that that Instagram video where it's like, they got us in the first half. But the second half, we were ready to go. And, you know, I just love Najigba in that game. I felt like he made every catch. Stroud was putting it on the money. And, like, I was like, once we got the lead, I was like, oh, now it's starting to work. And, you know, it's one of those classics for the Rose Bowl. I don't know if it's the, you know, Troy Smith or Vince Young versus USC classic, but, you know, it's pretty special.
No, that's awesome. Dude, this has been a lot of fun. We got to do this again. You have absolutely a career in broadcasting after you're done, man, because you do this stuff. You do this stuff easily. So I want to be on that train. I want to be on the Cam train once your career is over. But you got a long time before then.
We hope so.
No, you're the best. You're the best, man. It's been great to catch up with you. We'll do it again soon. And good luck to your Steelers as you go through the rest of the offseason.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right, Buck, how awesome is Cam, man? What a great dude and great insight from him today. It's awesome to have him on there.
A great insight. So, DJ, what you missed doing the combine coverage, Cam had to issue me a family apology for what his dad did to me as a player. So, like, you don't see this, but, like, if you come close to the thing, there's a cut right on my lip.
Yeah,
right
what is that?
Where it has stitches. Well, back in 1996, we were playing the Atlanta Falcons. I was with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We were playing them in a game to go to the postseason. We had to win to go in. And so late in the game, I'm playing nickel, and they send me off the edge on a blitz. And instead of them throwing the ball as we expected, they give it to Ironhead on a draw.
Oh,
and
no.
So if you can imagine me coming, I come in and I see it, and I have to take him out.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I took him out, he split my lip.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
There's a picture that I can post on
post
the thing of my lip completely bloody, where I had to go get stitched up, had to shave my mustache, get stitched up, come back in the game. And so I haven't had a mustache since. So I had him issue an apology from his family to me about how he disfigured my face.
What did he say? He had to have had a good laugh about that. Then he had to have enjoyed that.
He did.
Ironhead Hayward. Literally, his name is Ironhead. You don't want to hit that man.
I had to show him the picture. So there's this picture on the internet of my face, kind of bloody, where literally I hit his dad, and I get up and I take my helmet off because I'm like, what? It looks like being a fighter. I tasted my own blood like Bruce Lee.
Yeah. Now we're going.
So now we're
by the way, Laken Tomlinson just signed with the New York Jets, so they needed a guard and they get one there in Laken Tomlinson. And he's played in the
scheme. Okay, so now look, true. Last week, I think maybe it was on the show.
I hit that one.
TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I talked about him potentially going to Miami to join Mike McDaniel. You're like,
hold on.
The Jets might have something to say because they also coach in San Francisco and might have a little intel on him. So that was good luck.
So good signing there. All right. We need to get real quick here. Your thoughts on Tom Brady coming back. I guess we shouldn't be totally surprised. Are we?
DJ, you just can't stay away. Look, man, this game is a drug that just brings people in and it's hard to shake it. And I give him credit. He realized in 2 months, this ain't going to get better. Not going to get better. Because for Tom Brady, the thing that Tom Brady – we hadn't even got to OTAs. Tom Brady missed off-season workouts. Mm-hmm. He missed getting ready. He didn't know what to do with himself. He's all over, and he's at the house, and he's taking kids to school. He's like, I'm ready. I'm ready to go back. I think I think this is great. I think he also is very calculated, because when we look at the NFC, the path is so clear for them. The path is clear. If they can just build up a decent roster, you're talking about being able to kind of pencil them, the Packers, the LA Rams, and maybe the Niners into the tournament. And then it's about, as you know, with him, if they get in and if he has a healthy squad with him, they got to punch his chance on anybody. And he's still the boogeyman to Aaron Rodgers and those guys up north. And the Rams had to have a miraculous comeback to beat them. So I think he feels good about his chances of being able to do it. And then he got out in time to get those free agents to come back.
You know when we should have known, by the way? The second that they – because we said at the time, right, wow, they tagged Godwin, who I love. He's a great player, but a mm-hmm. receiver coming off of an ACL. And they're going to let a 25-year-old corner who's really talented in Carlton Davis walk. And then we should have been able to figure it out. Like, yeah, no blank, Sherlock. Like, that. Tom Brady's going to want to come back. He doesn't care. I mean, Carlton Davis is a good player, but you can sign all the corners you want. He doesn't care. He loved Chris Godwin. Like, you bring Chris Godwin back, and you let the corner walk, and you got a better chance of getting Tom Brady to come back. So that should have been the sign, I guess. We should have perked up and said, okay, yeah, no, this is all about Brady. They're kind of clearing everything out to make it the most attractive situation they could possibly make it for him to come back.
And they absolutely did it. And so it's a really good thing for him. It's a good thing for him to come back. It's a good thing for us to be able to see him continue to do his deal. And look, we won't say it. Like, I know people get tired of it, but I have an appreciation for excellence. So we get a chance to see him do it. And it would have been the rare thing where you see a player go out on top individually, not his team having the confetti fall on them, but the guy was still playing maybe the best football of his career, like led the league in passing. I mean, just, yeah, you don't see that. I mean, you don't see that. So
no,
ride it till the wheels fall off. I mean, he has the rest of his life to do all that other stuff. It's crazy. Yeah,
no doubt. All right, anything else you want to add before we jump out of here? This stuff is coming fast and furious. Hopefully you guys enjoyed listening to this as we're just kind of reacting real time to all this stuff going down.
So crazy. So good. No, it's it. Look, man, look, free agency, the NFL continues to do again. Like, free agency is crazy, but now that we're seeing some of these free agents sign, you know, it's time for other mock drafts. It's time for,
well, I mean, everything we've said, everything stuff. Everything we said with the Jags when they signed, when they franchise tagged Cam Robinson, was this is pointing towards Aiden Hutchinson. Now they go out and they sign Brandon Scherf. So they're doing the offensive thing in kind of the veteran way to help their quarterback. And that's going to free them up with the first overall pick to park that drive right in the middle of the fairway with Aiden Hutchinson.
Right. Coming right off the weekend of the TPC. Yeah. You're going to hit that thing right there. On it. Go pop it right on the island 17 and just make it happen. No. So this is what you typically do. We talk about with young quarterbacks, you go get veteran people around them that know how to play so they have certainty and stability. That gives them the opportunity for the quarterback to develop really quickly. And Doug Peterson and Trent Baalke, they're putting that plan in place. So they have an opportunity to kind of hit the ground running when they start this year, the first year of Doug Peterson's tenure.
No doubt. Fun. It's fun day in the National Football League. Hope you guys have enjoyed this as much as we have. And we'll catch you right back here on Move the Sticks.